Hey, it's Lunch Bucket Joe Thursday.
Oh, I love Lunch Bucket. Well, I like middle class Joe. Is this the same
really?
Joe?
Same Joe.
Is it Pennsylvania Joe?
No, it's Delaware Joe.
Well,
Joe.
Formerly Pennsylvania Joe, near Katie's Restaurant. And the Home Depot.
Well, he hadn't been there for a while. And I don't think he's going there anytime soon. As we lay out a little bit on some of the Lunch Bucket Joe, the small misdemeanors, not the high crimes per se, on today's podcast, we remind you that tonight at 5 p.m., or may have already happened depending on what time you are listening, but on Thursday on Blaze TV, make sure you grab that episode about Joe Biden. This guy is the most corrupt vice president in the history of America. And we're going to try to lay out two stories. I don't know if we're going to have time. May have to break it up into two episodes. But it's stunning.
Two huge problems with what you're saying. Number one, if there was a place to watch it, then that would be something. At
but
least
you
if you had that.
The Blaze TV.
BlazeTV.com/Glenn. Well, what do I do when I get there? Do
you
I type
just sign
anything?
Up. Yeah, you just sign
do
up.
Do I type a code in any specific place?
Yeah, well, you just click on it and then you just sign up. And you can even try it for 7 days for free. And if you don't like it, then just cancel.
Well, it just doesn't. I wouldn't do it without a promo code to save $10.
Well, just, yeah, type in GLENN.
Okay, well, that solves problem one. But problem two is, as you point out, if people are listening to this later, they've missed the show. There's no way to view
watch it.
They
go to BlazeTV.com and they can watch it, you know, in the archives, the show archives.
On demand?
On demand.
Whenever I want?
Whatever
it
you
starts
want.
Whenever I want
whatever
to watch it? Wow.
Here's what I would like to focus on here on today's podcast with Stu. The way he uses the word awful when he is talking about Maxine Waters. Also, we have two big guests on today's podcast, Bill O'Reilly and Carly Fiorina. And you don't want to miss a second of today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Lunch Bucket Joe. Today is his day. He likes to remind America as often as possible that he's just a regular guy. But beneath his carefully crafted narrative is a familiar story of old-fashioned crony capitalism. Or in this case, we should call it brony capitalism. Starting in November of 2010, when, remember, Joe Biden was the guy who was supposed to make sure that TARP and everything was super, super clean, right? His job was to oversee, to make sure that there was no graft going on or anything else. Well, in 2010, Joe Biden's younger brother, James Biden, was named executive vice president of Hillstone. Now, this is a housing subsidiary of a company called Hill International. Hill International owns 51% of Hillstone. It's a group of partners, including James Biden, who owned the other 49%. Now, James Biden has zero documented work history in the construction industry. Let me go over that again. How much experience does he have in construction? Zero. But 6 months after he joined Hillstone, the company scored a $1.5 billion construction contract from the U.S. government to build 100,000 homes in war-torn Iraq. Again, how much construction expertise does he have? Zero. How much money did he get to build homes where he has how much experience building? Zero. He received $1.5 billion. The minority partners in Hillstone would pocket $735 million of that contract. So out of the 1.5, for the guy who has how much construction experience? Lots. Zero.
Oh,
zero. They pocket $735 million, which means minus the expenses for the actual construction work, James Biden and the rest of his minority partners would stand to pocket tens of millions of dollars. Analysts were puzzled. How does this brand new construction business created in 2010 get this sweet contract? In a meeting with investors, the president of Hillstone's parent company, David Richter, reportedly told them, quote, it really helps to have the brother of the vice president as a partner, end quote.
I bet it does.
Other lucrative government deals materialized strangely for Hill International, including 2012, a $22 million contract to manage the construction of State Department offices. How much experience?
Unlimited.
Zero. Ah. James Biden wasn't Hillstone's only connection to vice president. Hillstone's president, Kevin Justice, grew up in Delaware, a close friend of Joe Biden's sons, Beau and Hunter. However, by the beginning of 2012, Kevin Justice claimed that James Biden and David Richter, who was president of Hill International, were trying to dilute Justice's ownership stake in the $1.5 billion Iraq project deal and control all of the money. Kevin Justice left the company in February 2012. And as you will see tonight, crony capitalism absolutely thrives under Joe Biden. You can never accuse him of not trying to take care of his own. He's an expert at keeping things in the family. This is Joe Biden's biggest political achievement. For anybody who thinks that Joe Biden is lunch bucket Joe, anybody who thinks, he's just kind of a crazy guy, he's really not. This is a very, very good businessman. If your business is the family business, he's a very good businessman. And tonight, we will show you not this. This is no big deal. This is nothing. I mean, zero experience to a $1.5 billion construction bill? That's nothing. Tonight, I will show you, hopefully, we're not sure we have time for both. We may have to break it up into two shows. We will show you two examples of where not only is his family massively profiting, but profiting at the expense of the United States of America and profiting at the expense of the security of the United States of America. Joe Biden should be nowhere near an Oval Office. We have done research to put all of this together, but the people who are really responsible for the research, you will meet over the next couple of days. They have spent years putting this together. We have phone conversations. We have documents. We have photographs. We have... We have even the banking records on part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty clear. No conspiracy. But if you're looking for facts, you have to go to theblazetv.com/Glenn and sign up. Now, you can sign up. Just watch today's show. If we don't deliver on today's show, you can cancel. But if you find this of value and you find this and say, wow, nobody is putting this together, nobody is explaining this to America, then I'd ask that you would keep your subscription. But you can just try it for free for 7 days. If it's not worth it, fine. Just watch today's show. Because today's show is the beginning of showing you exactly who these people are. Actually, last night I did a show because we did the show on the border earlier this week, and I showed you on the chalkboard how that leads directly to Chicago and to communists. Media Matters is all up in arms, and they're all the deal is Glenn Beck says George Soros is funding. He's an anti-Semite. Forget the George Soros stuff.
So first, boring, though. I mean, how many times can they say the same stupid thing?
Oh, my gosh, it's so boring. Forget about George Soros. That's not the story. The story is the communists in Chicago that are actually working to do a human wave assault on the United States with these caravans. It is clear. It is clear cut. The records are there. AP has even verified much of this story. They're bragging to the AP. These communists are bragging to the AP that they are doing it. So Media Matters is all upset that we have exposed this. And of course, you know you're over the target when you start getting flack. When you start, when they start shooting at you, you know you're real close to the target. Tonight, we take you to the next step, which is Joe Biden. Last night, and I can't do this one on radio, I'm sorry, but it is so chalkboard intensive that you really have to see it. Last night, I told you who the next president was going to be. Last night, I didn't name them. I did what I did under Barack Obama. When Barack Obama was running in 07, I said, if this guy becomes president, the guy who will follow him will be the exact opposite, because this guy's so buttoned up. He's so on target. He is so connected to the teleprompter. He doesn't make a mistake. He's completely slick, not a hair out of place. That the next guy, and I was really kind of describing more of a Chris Christie, would be kind of a fat guy with a gravy stain, and he'd be like, yeah, let me tell you something else. Well, that's really what we have in Donald Trump. We have the guy at the end of the bar on the bar stool that's just telling it like it is. I was right about who would follow. I'm telling you, if you watched last night's show, I described our next president. Now, it doesn't have to be that way.
And doesn't have to be 2020 either. I mean, if you remember, Obama took two terms.
And I think it actually would be 2024. Mm-hmm. But I want you to watch this and listen carefully, because the next president of the United States could be the last president of the United States as we know it. So join us this week. It's a very big week on Blaze TV. Blaze TV, just sign up now. BlazeTV.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn, and you're going to save $10.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. We're going to go to A.G. Barr here in just a second and what happened on Capitol Hill. But I want to really start with Bernie's taxing behavior. It's the latest op-ed from Mr. Bill O'Reilly. Hi, Bill. How are you?
I'm okay, Beck. Thanks for having me back. Okay. I appreciate it.
Are you ever good?
You know, that's a high bar. I always strive to be good.
Right. But when somebody asks you...
Angst, you know, I got to deal with a lot of them.
Right. At any point in your life when somebody said, how you doing? You went, good. Did that ever...
I'm like Yoda. I sit there, I have to deal with all of the problems and try to sort them all out for everybody. So it's a heavy burden.
Go out and get yourself an Orange Julius. Those always remind me of my childhood, and they always make you feel better. So
Orange Julius.
All right. Talk to me about Bernie Sanders.
All right. So the column is entitled Bernie's Taxing Situation, and because he's going to put out his taxes on Monday. But we already know that Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont, the socialist, is a millionaire twice over. All right? So he's got assets of about more than $2 million, according to himself.
Okay, now you're not...
So you got three homes.
You're not against millionaires,
no,
clearly.
Hey, I'm a capitalist.
Right.
I applaud Bernie.
Correct.
But Bernie's vision for the country is dangerous, so I must put Bernie's rhetoric in perspective with his actions, which is why I'm never good.
Mm-hmm.
Because I always have to think about these things.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
All right. So Bernie's got three houses. All right? He's got a little condo in D.C., got a big lake house in Lake Champlain. Samuel D. would be very impressed with that spread.
It's like, and then it's like three-quarters of $1 million.
We don't really know where that is.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Then he's a millionaire because he sells books.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, I don't know why Bernie's not giving those books away. Because there's a lot of people that don't, they can't spend $30 on a book. they ought to kind of get a little book subsidy from Bernie, but no. But the big thing that I learned about Bernie Sanders is that in the last 2 years, he spent $340,000 on private jets. So now I sent my column to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in the hopes that somebody would read it to her. And I want to know about the Green New Deal and Bernie, because I think Bernie's Green New Deal is in his wallet.
So can I ask you a question? Bernie Sanders has been...
Your show, you absolutely have that right.
So Bernie Sanders has been in politics since 18... When did he start?
12.
When did he get into politics? Do you know? Well, let me ask you this
Bernie
question.
Bernie was a hippie in Brooklyn.
Right.
And decided he didn't really want to work for a living. And this is true.
Mm-hmm.
And moved up to Vermont, where far more cows than people,
mm-hmm.
and started to run for office. And he lost. He lost. I mean, he couldn't win. But then finally, he became mayor of Burlington, Vermont, the largest city in the state. And then from there, became a congressman. There's only one congressman in Vermont because they don't have any people. Two senators, one congressman. All right. And then he's been on the government dole more than 20 years, I believe. I think he might be approaching 30.
So
he's a career politician.
So where did he make the millions of dollars? Now, I know he said...
The books.
Uh-huh.
The books.
Uh-huh.
So he...
Now, I believe that with you, Bill.
Well, no, Beck. No, you don't... No, let me... And this is actually an excellent question that I'm glad you asked permission to ask.
Mm-hmm.
An excellent question.
I know who's running the show
here. Here's how Bernie amassed $2 million. Okay. Number one, his campaign contributions take care of every single expense the man has. He wants M&Ms, campaign expense. All right? I need energy to give my speech. Every expense is paid for by the donors to his campaign. Now, this is the second time he's run for president, and he's raised, I think, in excess of close to $100 million. Okay. So no expenses. Then he puts out books that his people, and there are Bernie people, mm-hmm. apparently buy. But even if they didn't, he gets an advance on the book, which means that the publishing company pays him a significant amount of money. You add that to never paying for anything, and you can save a lot of money.
And has he done well in investments? Because
a lot of people invest.
Really?
I can't say. I mean, look, I don't have access to his portfolio. I don't have access to his tax returns. I'm happy he's giving them out on Monday. We'd take a look. What I do know is a few years ago, Bernie donated $8,000 to charity. $8,000. Now, that'll get you on a private jet from Vermont to New Hampshire.
Right? No, that'll allow you to land on the tarmac. Mm-hmm.
So is Bernie anguishing over the poor at $8,000? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know, Beck, you give a lot of money to charity. I certainly do. I have a foundation. Okay. I don't think Bernie's doing that. He's got his little kayak. He's got his little canoe up there on Lake Champlain, you know. At least he wasn't. Maybe he is now. We'll see.
Let's go to taxes first before I go to the Attorney General. Yesterday, there was quite a showdown on Capitol Hill with Maxine Waters and Donald Trump's tax returns. Now, you just said you're happy that Bernie Sanders is turning over his tax returns on Monday. Should Donald Trump turn in his tax returns?
Theoretically, yes. But if I were Trump, I would not. And here's why. As you know, I'm writing The United States of Trump, okay? Mm-hmm. A history book on Donald, his family, how he got where he is, the only two people on earth that could have become president with his background, him and Oprah Winfrey. That's it. Two people on a planet. So the reason that Trump doesn't give out his tax returns is because they are very complicated, and they take into account depreciation on his real estate empire and all kinds of things that you can just twist and turn and make it look like the guy's a criminal. So it's a very complicated deal. He runs a very sophisticated real estate empire. He knows he puts out his tax return. This is going to be the main story for 3 months straight. It's like Romney. Same thing's going to happen. So that's why he doesn't do it. And if I were him, I wouldn't do it either.
So I will tell you this.
For his tax returns to examine it in an objective way or to explain it, they're looking at it to hurt him.
Right.
So that's why he doesn't do it.
I will tell you that during the campaign, I thought he should have released them. And I thought he was not releasing them because I don't think he has the kind of money. His money is all borrowed money. It's all, you know, he's very good at using other people's money to build things. And then he puts his name on things. And so his image is that he's, you know, a multi-billionaire. He's very, very wealthy and may be a billionaire, but I don't think he's as rich as everybody thinks he does. And I think that's part of his mystique that he wouldn't want to let out. And I just wanted to see the tax returns because I thought people should know what he's doing. This at this point, however, and I don't think this is a flip-flop because I, like you, think he should release them. But if I were him, I would not. Only
right.
Because there's no there, Congress, Maxine Waters is going to give me a fair shake. It is I'm only feeding the beast.
Right. And Maxine's had her own problems with her husband, who's a big bank guy and does the same kind of thing that Trump does. Look, every American, I think I can generalize, will take the deductions that are allowed them.
Yes.
Trump has never gotten in trouble with the IRS. They always audit him because he does have all of his crazy stuff and takes advantage of every loophole he can take advantage of. So that's the story. But the thing you and Stu need to know about Donald Trump, and this is why you're going to love my book, is because Donald Trump's whole life is a transaction. And that is where you start if you want to understand the president of the United States and how he governs.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is a transaction.
Mm-hmm.
So the transaction here is, should I put out my tax return? And then the question Trump asks is, what will I get in return? And the answer is nothing. I'm not going to get goodwill.
No, I think you get
misery.
I'm not
going to get a fair shake.
Yeah.
It's all going to be used against me. So that's a stupid transaction, and I'm not going to do it.
Yes.
And that's the way he thinks.
Bill, let's talk about the Attorney General's appearance yesterday, because there are two stories out there. One was that the Attorney General said, I believe that there was a targeting and spying on Donald Trump, and I'm looking into it. The other story is, that's not what he said. What he said was, you look into it, and I don't know if we should even trust him anyway. What happened yesterday?
All right, here's what happened. The Attorney General signaled to the country in a very subtle way, he's an interesting guy if you listen to him, that he knows that the FBI spied on the Trump campaign. He knows that happened. All right? And it's true, it did happen. Now, he used the word...
Wait. How do you know that? Is that just...
Because they got FISA warrants, they being the FBI, to put a wire on a man named Carter Page,
mm-hmm.
who was working with the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. Now, that's a spy. They're spying on Carter Page because he's a member of the Trump campaign.
Okay.
Got it? Okay. Now, then Barr said, but I don't know whether the spying was illegal. He used a different word than illegal. And that's what we're looking into. But if you follow what happened in the FISA warrant, and that is the FBI went into a judge and said, Judge, we need to spy on Carter Page. Please give us a warrant to do so. And the judge said, why? Why do you need to spy on poor Carter? And they said, well, because we have this dossier that we have obtained that says the Trump campaign and the candidate himself is compromised by Russia and did a lot of bad things in Russia, and they are blackmailing him. And the judge went, wow, okay, here's your warrant to spy on Carter Page. And we now know that dossier was phony, and it was paid for by the Clinton campaign. So bringing a judge fraudulent reasons, and the FBI knew that the dossier wasn't true, to get a warrant is a Class A felony. That is very important. Now, Barr knows all this is true, but he's not going to convict Comey, McCabe, and the other FBI people on television. He's not going to do that. He's going to say, well, I'm going to look into this. It's already being looked into by the Inspector General of the Justice Department, Michael Horowitz, and another U.S. attorney named Huber out of Utah. So now we have three looking into it. Now, this is interesting. On CNN last night, all right, Clapper, one of the main drivers of spying on Donald Trump, said, oh, we weren't really spying on Trump. We were spying on the Russians, but we had to use Trump people to get the information on the Russians. Did you see that?
That doesn't make any sense.
Okay, that's the defense.
Right, but it doesn't.
That Comey and McCabe and Clapper and all of them are going to use. No, no, no. We weren't spying on the Trump campaign. We had to get information about Putin.
Then why would you? Why would you use?
The only way we could do that was to wire and to surveil Carter Page.
That doesn't make sense. Why? Why? If you believe that Trump was innocent and a good American and everybody was it was open, why wouldn't you just say to them, hey, by the way, we need to tap this because we're concerned about this.
We
why
want
wouldn't
to do
you?
His thing.
Why wouldn't
we
you?
We want to do his thing.
Exactly right.
Of course.
And why wouldn't
so
you?
You should be the prosecuting attorney in this case, Beck.
And why wouldn't?
Because then you could demolish their argument in 2 seconds. Go, no. That's not how you do it.
Right.
You don't violate an American's rights and a political campaign's rights. You don't do that to try to get criminal activity on another person. You do his thing.
And doesn't
enlist
it,
their cooperation.
And doesn't it show intent on the FBI in a negative way if they are doing this and not alerting Donald Trump? I mean, this...
Well, you can make that argument. They're going to counter and say, oh, no, we didn't have any animus. We were just doing it this way because it was easier. But here's the end game. So Barr knows what happened, and he's an attorney general. No, like Jeff Sessions, the attorney general from the beginning of the trial, he had no blanking clue about what was going on. Barr, he knows. Now Barr has got to make a decision. Do you disrupt the federal government of the United States? All right, do you tear it apart because they did this? Because you know Loretta Lynch, the other attorney general under Obama, when this was all going on, they're going to haul her right in. And that leads to who?
Clinton.
Barack Obama. No, Barack Obama. Hmm. Clinton's divorced from this. Clinton campaign, they sleazed out by getting this phony dossier. All right, but they didn't have, you don't think they had, and maybe they did. But Obama had to know about this surveillance. Had to. Now, Bill, did he know it was illegal? I don't know that.
Bill.
But once you start to domino down, once you put handcuffs on Comey and McCabe and Strzok and Page, and or five FBI high-ranking people, they're going to start to talk. Oh, I was ordered to do it. Oh, I told Loretta Lynch she signed off on it. And then Loretta Lynch pulls in, oh, no, President Obama told me to do it. That's what happened in Watergate. That's exactly what happened in Watergate.
That'd be interesting to watch.
So Barr's got to decide, do you want to blow the government up or not? And I don't know what that decision is going to be, because these guys really don't want to blow up their country, and this would.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. I urge you to join and follow Bill and watch the product that he puts out. It is an important voice for America. He also has a brand new book that is coming out in September, and it is all about the United States of Trump and what Trump really thinks about America. It's always worth a read with Bill O'Reilly. And Bill, I want to change the subject, and I want to go to the border here.
Bill O'Reilly, a lead commentator and author of the guy who knows Trump better than anybody. The border situation is interesting to me. Because when Jeff Sessions is there, they put in this family separation policy, which was really just kind of a change in enforcement. And at that time, they're complaining about a crisis, about 8,000 families crossing the border every month. They put this policy in, and it basically works as a deterrent. They hold it at about 8,000. eventually the media pressure comes along and they reverse that policy, and it has escalated ever since until this last month where 53,000 families come across the border. The problem is seven times as bad. Trump is taking action. He's blowing everybody out in the department. So one, what is he doing with the department? And two, was it a mistake to change that policy under the media pressure initially?
The policy goes back all the way to the Bill Clinton presidency, that if you are a migrant family and you come into the United States illegally, the children are then taken into protective custody by immigration officials while their parents are adjudicated. And that'd been going on for, what, 40 years? Maybe more. So in the Obama administration, obviously we have pictures of that.
Yep.
And we saw them. So the Trump people come in, they just carry on the same policy. They probably didn't even know that it was going to become a controversial issue. When it did, Trump changed it. Okay. So now you have a siege at the border where 200,000 human beings plus every month are trying to get in here to apply for asylum. It's a con. Everybody knows it's a con. Beck appeared on Hannity and rightly said that the origins of this come from George Soros-funded groups that are based in Chicago. You may remember BillO'Reilly.com broke that story about a year ago. I remember talking to you guys about it.
Yeah, we talked about it. We talked about it too. What we talked about this what is it, Casa de Ventura? I can't remember what it's called, but
the
people without borders.
People without borders.
We talked about that.
The people without borders are in Honduras, but the American
head
so-called charities that funnel money to them are in Chicago.
Correct.
With a head base in D.C.
Correct.
And those names are listed on BillO'Reilly.com. I don't have them on the top of my head.
Yes.
But anyway, all they did was basically get the word out on social media. If you put one foot in the United States, you can apply for asylum and they'll let you go and you can be in the country for 3-4 years. You can work, send money back to mom and dad in Tegucigalpa. That's how it started. Now it's out of control. So what I would do if I were President Trump is suspend all asylum applications for 90 days at least and say, we have to get this under control. We don't have enough facilities down there. We don't have enough judges. And we're going to not take any asylum applications by order of the president. He can do that. Now, immediately, the liberal judges in California would try to block it in the courts. But you have to go through that. But this is a big reelection issue now for President Trump. He's going to run on the economy. He's going to run on the border and illegal immigration. So he should do that and fight that fight that way.
Can we fight this battle, Bill, without actually going to the root of the problem? And the root of the problem is this is not a naturally occurring issue. This is being well orchestrated and well planned. Pardon me?
It's like drug dealing. It's the same thing. It's run by the same people.
Right. And you can't.
The cartels.
No, they're.
And they charge the family $5,000-$6,000. They school the family on what to do. They get them to the border. And then kids take over and they walk across the Rio Grande or they climb a fence or they do something. It's a very contrived, organized criminal activity.
I see this differently. I see that as the system and the free market, if you will, sensing a need. And here comes the corrupt people to make that all your dreams come true. That's the invisible hand of the market. I mean the people who actually have designed this. They started in 2006. They are communists. They are the ones who started the sanctuary city thing in 2008, I think it was, or 12. They started to say that, you know what we need are caravans. They carefully planned this. This is a human wave theory, and it is happening here in the United States. Everything else is a branch off of that. You've got to get the people that are here behind the crisis itself, the ones who are causing the crisis.
You can't charge them with anything because there's no violation of U.S. law by giving money to organizations like People Without Borders. You can, that's perfectly legal. So it'd be very hard to make a RICO case that you could try against these so-called cherries who are doing it. But you're right, they're doing it for a political reason.
Yes.
It's the same thing that happened in Europe with the flood of North Africans and Middle Eastern people.
Yes.
And the governments of Austria and Poland and the Czech Republic basically put up huge fences.
Yes.
And were backed up by military.
And they were the
nobody's coming in here.
And they were called haters, and they're the only ones. They're the only countries that are not being destabilized now internally by all of those North African immigrants.
The federal government under President Trump has got to have the barrier, the wall, and the military. The military is already there. Now he's saying he's going to bring more down. But you have to get the asylum law changed. It has to be changed because they found a loophole in the illegal immigration system, whereby if you put one foot on U.S. soil, you're entitled to the whole megillah of applying for asylum, and they can't get to you for 4 years.
How is megillah not word of the day?
How
is megillah not word of the day? How do you get through that sentence?
Is a mythical creature who has a goatee and kind of blonde hair and lives in Dallas.
I used to watch Megilla Gorilla. Is that any relation?
Of course. Yeah, it's a mythical creature.
Okay, all right.
I mean, but Bill, have you seen any reporting on these? Because I'm amazed. We see lots of reporting on Venezuela, right? That there's at least some that shows how bad it is there. I have not seen the equivalent reporting from Honduras or any of these countries that supposedly are having these huge problems that need new asylum requests.
Well, I mean, I don't know what you want. It's been going on down there since the conquistadors.
It's ugly, but it's not any more ugly than it's been.
I mean, Central America has been a center of poverty forever because of the systems are corrupt. I mean, my local newspaper, Newsday, which is like reading the ravings of a five-year-old. All right. So, we have to solve the problems in El Salvador, Guatemala. And, okay, fine. You know, it's just if you go there, and I've been there. I covered the Salvadoran War in the 80s. I know what it is. All right. It's corrupt all across the board, and the poor people don't have anything. And if I lived in Honduras, I'd try to come to the United States too. I have to be honest. I would try to come here with my family too, because living down there is horrible. But what are you going to do? You can't change it from El Norte. Mm-hmm. We can't change it.
All right. Bill, how many books have I helped you sell?
Many, many over the years, Beck. Right, and Killing the SS is still in the marketplace.
So what's your...
I know you like that book.
I do.
With the focus on Israel and the new election.
So what you're saying is you owe me a favor.
Well, Beck, you know,
I accept.
Business to help you.
I accept.
Always.
I accept.
But I think coming on your program every week is
not exactly charity.
I mean, that's a pretty good deal, right?
Right. Here's the favor that I'm going to call in a chip. Okay. I want you to interview somebody, and I don't think this is a big favor to ask because once you know the story, it's an unbelievable story. There is a guy. He's a liberal journalist. Okay, his name is Blake Harris. He was known as writing one of the best books of the year according to Publishers Weekly and everything else. He wrote Console Wars. He's a tech guy. He's a Silicon Valley guy. He starts writing this story about Oculus and this great American story about this 19-year-old kid living in a trailer, you know, finally figuring out VR and doing what nobody else could do. He sells Oculus to Facebook for $2 billion. He is working with Zuckerberg on Facebook until the election. The election happens. He says that he's going to vote for Donald Trump. He gives a $10,000 donation anonymously to this company that's going to put billboards around the country. And all of a sudden, that anonymous donation is outed, and he is blamed for all of the memes. The worst memes that you see on the internet are all coming from him. It's this Facebook Oculus guy. And Everyone reports that he's the worst human being in the world. Then Mark Zuckerberg, Lucky Palmer is his name. He wants to set the record straight. He says, I'm going to release this statement. Zuckerberg says, no, you're not. You're going to release this one, which says, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. I never liked Donald Trump. I'm going to vote for Gary Johnson, which is not what he was going to do. He took it because he wanted to save his job. And he was like, everybody around him said, you can sue Zuck, but you're going to be tied up in courts forever. He made the wrong choice. Time goes on. He's fired from Zuckerberg. He's left to go and pursue other adventures. The guy is destroyed. His life is absolutely destroyed. Blake Harris is given full access to him and to Zuckerberg and all of Facebook because Blake's writing this story about Oculus before the election. And then he sees all of this start to shake out. He goes in a fan of Zuckerberg and Facebook. He comes out saying, this is evil. What is happening is so wrong. They're crushing people. It's illegal what Zuckerberg is doing. He spends 3.5 years writing this book. No one in the liberal media, they've all turned on him because he said, you know, this is what's going on. His liberal journalist friends have all said, that's not the kind of political injustice we care about. He's been called a Nazi, a MAGA supporter. He's none of those things. And I want to give you one quote he wrote me in a personal email last night. He said, you know, his life had been destroyed. He said, then after a cup of coffee, the answer of why would I do this became overwhelmingly obvious, because that's what journalism is. You follow the story where it takes you, and you never, however tempting it may be, let it go the other way around. You follow leads. You examine evidence. You continue to dig deeper and deeper until you get to the truth, not for the praise you think you deserve, not to try to be everybody's best friend, but because however fast or partisan or cynical the world has gotten, the truth still matters. He wrote this book yesterday. It was 33,336 on the bestseller list on Amazon. After the interview, it went to number 6 on Amazon. This story is one of the most compelling stories. This guy won't agree with you, Bill, but this guy is an honest guy who's trying to tell the truth, and courage is so rare. I would like you to highlight him and his book.
All right. I mean, we'll definitely talk to him. When did the book come out?
It's already out. It's been out for a month. Nobody has talked about it at all. No, he can't get an interview with anybody.
Nobody will put him on.
Yeah, we did. We were the first one.
Facebook will take Ben out on them. That's how powerful Facebook is.
Right. Yeah. That's exactly what's happening. So I'll send you this. I'll send you his information. Please have him on,
Bill. Send me all his stuff. I'll be happy to talk to him.
Good. Thank you very much. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. By the way, the name of the book is The History of the Future. Let's make this book number one, please. Please go buy this book.
I mean, Bill could probably do that. Yeah. You could get him to number 6, and then Bill can get him to number 1.
I got him from 33,000 to number 6 in one show.
It's just not good enough.
The History of the Future by Blake Harris. Hopefully he will join us again tomorrow. He's got a lot more to say about what's going on at Facebook.
This is the Best of the Glenn Beck Program.
Carly Fiorina, former chairman and CEO of Hewlett-Packard and blah, 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 presidential candidate and vice presidential candidate and good friend and really good person who I got to know fairly well. And I just admire her so much. She has written a new book that is not about politics. And I think it's far more important. Welcome to the program, Carly Fiorina.
Thank you. Good morning, Glenn. So good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you. So, Carly, it's so strange that you write this book, because my father died a few years ago, and my father really shaped my life and shaped my thinking in so many ways. And for reasons not worth getting into now, I lost a lot of that after he died. And I've been trying to figure things out. I went to Tony Robbins. I spent some time with Tony Robbins and And that has helped get my mojo back in many ways, and trying to, take control of my own power and my own mind and work to my potential. It's a hard thing to do if you don't know a few basic secrets to grab on to your own potential and to realize that you have a lot of power in you as an individual.
Well, that's exactly why I wrote this book, which is called Find Your Way. And I wrote it now because, honestly, I think so many people feel the way you felt after your dad died. So many people feel kind of helpless and powerless and hopeless, and they look at institutions that they thought were supposed to be solving problems and making things better. They're disappointed by so many people who call themselves leaders because they have positions and titles. And yet, what I've learned from my own life, but more importantly, from the lives of so many people I've met in so many different places along the way, here are some fundamental things that are true. All of us have more potential than we realize, mm-hmm. Period. Number two, people closest to the problem know best how to solve it, always, whether they're given the opportunity to do so, or they think it's their job to do so, or they have the resources to do so. If there's a problem that impacts each of us, we actually know what would make it better. And number three, leadership, fundamentally, the purpose of leadership is not position or title or wealth or fame. It's to solve problems and change the order of things for the better. And leaders are made. In the end, leadership is a choice. And so what I talk about in this book is, what does it take to lead? Some fundamental things that are really hard to learn, but they are within each of our capacity to learn. Things like courage. We're all afraid. How do you get over your fears? Character. We're all tempted to do the easy thing instead of the right thing. We're all tempted to let the ends justify any means, even if we know they're wrong. And by the way, we see that going on around us all the time. Things like humility and empathy.
Did we lose Carly? Did we lose her? Because I don't hear her.
Yeah.
My headphones. Yes, we lost her. Courage, character, humility, empathy, the things that you say, are really important.
Yes, and seeing possibilities in even tough circumstances, but particularly seeing possibilities in other people. These have always been the core of leadership, by the way, but we're mixed up about it because we think it's position and title. And we're also mixed up about it because our culture, let's face it, lifts up everything but these things. You know, we lift up outrage, conflict, controversy, fame. You know, we lift up all these things. And so people start to wonder, do these fundamentals still matter? And yes, they do, particularly if somebody wants to change the order of things for the better in their own life, in their own place of work, in their own sphere of influence, and solve the problems in front of them. And that we can all do if we learn or relearn some basic disciplines. And I have some very practical how-to tips of, how to get more brave. We're all afraid of things. How do you practice getting brave?
So that's something. I just had dinner with somebody last night who we had that very conversation about courage. And it is, it was interesting. You said courage, character, humility. I'm not sure which one comes first. I mean, I think character is the product of embodiment of all these other things. But does courage come before humility? I mean, how do we shape courage?
Right.
How do we grow it?
It's a package deal. And of course, one of the reasons I say this is countercultural right now is, first, let's acknowledge everyone's afraid of something. I do a lot of work with wounded warriors, and you would think these are people who can't be afraid of anything given what they're what they've gone through, but they are. They're afraid of being pitied. What are we all afraid of? I mean, there are existential fears. I'm afraid I'm going to die. I'm afraid my buddy's going to die. I'm afraid someone I love is going to die. But the truth is, most of us are paralyzed by the more superficial fear. I won't fit in. I'll make a mistake. I'll get criticized. I'll look foolish. I'll fall on my face. Those fears hold us back. And in this culture today, my gosh, everybody wants to fit in. No one wants to be criticized because criticism is so brutal out there. Or, you know, we curate our Instagram photos so our life looks perfect for people. And so, in order to actually change things, you have to be willing to get brave and say, okay, I might make a mistake. I do have to take a risk. People will criticize me. It's the price of changing things for the better. But nevertheless, I'm going to move on.
I want to play something. This is an Instagram star yesterday. This video came out yesterday afternoon. I want to play just a little bit of this. Sarah, can you roll the Instagram star that is receiving shutdown notices on some of her platforms?
Hey, guys. So, like, I'm in the middle of editing. And my Instagram account got deleted. And I'm trying to get it back. I'm calling everybody I can. And I don't know why it's not working out for me. I'm in LA because of this. I'm in LA because I want to be on Instagram. And I'm randomly just recording this to put this in the video. I am nothing without my following. I am nothing without my following.
Stop. Carly. This is one of the saddest things I've ever heard.
Yes.
I'm nothing without my following.
Yes. And this is what our culture is lifting up right now. You know, I wrote this book for everyone who's feeling helpless and hopeless and powerless, and especially in many ways for young people who have enormous pressure to fit in. And that is not our purpose in life. I mean, it's wonderful to have friends. It's wonderful to receive accolades. But I think there's a reason that the Bible talks more about courage than almost anything else. Because all change for the better requires courage, bravery. You know, one of the practical tips I put in here is write down what you're afraid of. Write it down. You know, my first business meeting ever, I started out as a secretary, as you know, Glenn. But when I finally went off and got my MBA and I landed in a big corporation and I was at this entry-level job, my first meeting, I was informed that my first meeting to meet a customer was going to be held in a strip club because that's what men did. And because they didn't really much care for me being around. I was terrified. Terrified. I sat for hours by myself trying to figure out, oh my God, what am I going to do? And finally, I had to write it down. What am I afraid of? And what I wrote down was, I'm afraid of looking like an idiot. By the way, I did. I'm afraid of being in a circumstance that I've never been in before. And then I said, okay, what's the worst thing that happens here? I look like an idiot. But actually, there's something worse, which is I get scared off and I can't do my job. One of the things that we all need to do is stop and pause and reflect. Bravery, anyone will tell you. Courage isn't the absence of fear. It's moving past fear. And we are so afraid of not fitting in. But when we all fit in, guess what happens? Nothing gets better. It just all stays the same.
Carly Fiorina, the name of the book is Find Your Way. Back in just 1 minute with more from Carly.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.